They came at 10 o'clock in the morning on July the 10th, 1940. They came in a small motorboat, crossing the strait from St. Peterport in Guernsey. They were led by Captain Hans Weiss of the 10th Regiment of Panzer Grenadiers with his sergeant, Feldwebel Kurt Vogel. Two of them. And a handful of soldiers. That's all it took to conquer Armorel, the most beautiful of the Channel Islands. My home.
We present Appointment with Venus by Gerard Tickell. Dramatized for radio in four parts by Michael Bartlett. With Karen Archer and David Collins as Nicola and Lionel, and Frederick Jaeger as Captain Weiss. Part 1, Occupation.
Sergeant?
Yes, Captain?
We shall be alongside in about a quarter of an hour. You know your orders.
Yes, Captain. It is the wish of the Fuhrer to respect those whom he has conquered.
Correct, Sergeant Vogel. These islanders have been subjects of the British Crown for centuries. They will be suspicious of us. It is our duty to win them over to our way of life. Not by force or guns, but by patience and example.
Yes, Captain.
I was not on Armorel when the Germans came. I was far away in England, peeling potatoes. It was there that I heard the broadcast that gave the Channel Islands, my island, to the enemy.
8 o'clock. Here is the news. It has been made known in London that on the withdrawal of the armed forces of the Crown from the Channel Islands, the King said that the link between the Crown and the islands would remain unbroken, and that he looked forward to the day when their resolute fortitude would reap the reward of victory.
Take the boat in there, straight to the quay. You know where we are, Sergeant?
The island of Armorel, Captain.
I meant the name of the harbour.
No, Captain.
This is the Havre de Muette. And they, unless I am much mistaken, are our welcoming committee.
I can see them as though I had been on the quayside myself. A little group of men in fishermen's jerseys and cloth caps. Except for one, an old man, his face lined and burned by the sun, who would doubtless have worn a black suit, an ancient bowler hat, and an image of Queen Victoria dangling from his watch chain. He used to let me play with that when I was a girl.
Which of you is the suzerain of Armorel?
I am the provost of Armorel. In the absence of our suzerain, it is I who am responsible.
Then it is to you I speak. The island will be taken over at once and occupied by the armed forces of the Reich. It is my duty to hand you the orders of the German commandant at Guernsey, and these orders will apply to Armorel. All islanders must remain indoors between 11 at night and 6 in the morning. No boat or vessel may leave any harbor or any other place. No one is allowed to go near the sea or down to the bays. All firearms must be surrendered immediately. All spirits must be locked up, and no alcohol may either be supplied or consumed.
I have no doubt that while he was reading the orders, Captain Weiss was watching the islanders closely. And when he reached the part about the ban on alcohol, he would have noticed the inevitable reaction from Jean Labouteille.
The ban on alcohol does not apply to stocks of alcohol in private houses or cottages.
Jean was known for loving his drink, perhaps a little too much. Weiss would not need panzers or bombers to dominate Armorel. Human frailty would do.
It is the wish of the Führer to respect those whom he has conquered.
Your Führer has not conquered the country with whom we are one.
No.
That, my friend, is just a question of time. I now wish to say that I hope that you, the islanders of Armorel, will do nothing to make the occupation unpleasant. That is all. Please lead the way to the abbey.
To understand the relations between the Germans and the islanders, it is necessary to understand a little about the history of Armorel itself. In the 16th century, Queen Elizabeth I granted the island to Hugo Falaise, appointing him suzerain and ordering that he and his descendants hold Armorel under the English crown forever.
Sergeant Fogel, bring the men ashore and then follow me to the abbey.
Yes, Captain.
And so it has been until this day. The simple business of the island is run by a group of six elected islanders called La Cour, who meet when necessary under the suzerain. In 1938, the current suzerain was drowned when his boat capsized, and his son Luke took over the task. Armorel continued as it had for 400 years, more or less oblivious to the rest of the world. But drums were beating in Europe.
They were prepared at once to withdraw their troops from Poland. A state of war would exist between us. I have to tell you now that no such undertaking has been received, and that consequently this country is at war with Germany.
On the day war was declared, a special meeting of La Cour was held, and Luc Falaise handed over the island and the guardianship of its people to the provost. Within the hour, the suzerain and his sister sailed out of Havre des Mouettes on their way to battle. The weeks passed. Weeds grew in the Abbey Drive. Then, with the advent of summer, news of attack and defeat reached the islanders, together with a new name, Dunkirk. On the first day of July 1940, a squadron of German bombers flew low over the island, and 10 days later, the provost put on his black suit and in silence led the members of La Cour to the harbour. As the vessel carrying the triumphant enemies rounded the breakwater, he spoke for the first time.
I give you one word, patience.
And how do I know all this? How can I, who was far away in England, understand this little society? I know because they are my people. I am Nicola Falaise, sister of the suzerain of Armorel.
You will please show us over the house.
Very well, Monsieur le Commandant.
The abbey is the home of the suzerain of Armorel, now unoccupied. From cellar to garret, the dust lay thick, the furniture draped in white sheets.
That is all.
You have not shown us this room.
This is the council chamber of Armorel. The suzerain would not wish you to enter it.
Open the door at once.
Very well.
The sunlight streaming into the panelled room. A long polished oak table shining like glass in the sun's beam. And I have no doubt that although the abbey had been empty for months, there was a silver bowl of dark red roses on the table.
How comes it,
my friend, that in a silent and neglected house, one room alone is prepared for visitors?
This is the council chamber of Armorel. It is not prepared for visitors. It is prepared for the return of the suzerain.
It would make a good office for me as the commandant of Armorel.
It awaits the return of the suzerain.
Sergeant Fogel.
Herr Hauptmann.
Take the dust sheets off the table in the dining room. That will be my office and orderly room. This council chamber is to remain undisturbed.
Zu Befehl, Herr Hauptmann.
I think that Monsieur le Commandant has made a wise decision.
I do not seek your approval. I demand your obedience.
Come. What is your name?
I am the provost of Armorel.
You prefer to be addressed by your office and not by your name?
Yes, it is the custom of the island.
I will be frank with you, Monsieur le Provost.
We seek your goodwill and your cooperation. We will respect your customs, but we will not tolerate obstinacy or obstruction. What is your name?
My name is Jacques Le Chemin, provost of Armorel.
Thank you. I propose, for the time being, to retain you in your office. You've heard our general orders. Here's a typewritten copy, which you will post up on the door of the abbey for all to see.
Very well.
I now come to a few particular points. Please give me your attention. All firearms and wireless sets must be surrendered at once.
I understand.
Now then, I noticed that when you dismissed your companions this morning, you spoke to them in the patois of the island. The occupying troops have been hand-picked for their knowledge of English, and the speaking of patois is banned absolutely.
But...
Yes?
I do not wish to make difficulties, but Monsieur le Commandant will understand that we have spoken our own language over the centuries, and it comes readily to our tongue.
There are many things the islanders will have to learn to forget. Let this be the first lesson.
Very well, Monsieur le Commandant. I will transmit your order to my friends of La Cour, who will make it known. I cannot do more than that.
Now, I would like you to give me a brief description of the island's system of government.
Monsieur le Commandant, our suzerain is the father of the island. It does not matter if he is young, as our suzerain is young, or old, as I am. He is still the father of us all. After our suzerain comes the provost.
This suzerain of yours, where is he?
I don't know, Monsieur le Commandant. The day that war was declared, he and his sister went away to join the forces of His Majesty, to fight for the great union of which we in Armorel are proud to be a tiny part.
So...
Perhaps this was the moment when Captain Weiss first realized that Armorel would not prove to be the haven from the dirt and cruelty of the war that he had hoped. And if so, he was not the only one in Armorel who would make the same discovery.
Tell me, when the suzerain left, did he take the whole of his family with him?
One member of the suzerain's family remains in Armorel. Only one.
Oh, who is that?
Lionel. Oh, Lionel.
He is the cousin of our suzerain. He is Mr. Lionel Falaise.
Ah. You will be good enough to present my compliments to this, dilatory princeling, and instruct him to call on me here at 3 o'clock this afternoon.
Lionel was my cousin. At the time the Germans came to Armorel, he was 28, a painter, and an unorthodox thinker. He was also an unorthodox painter. Lionel is the only man I ever knew who could look out over the Pointe de Joie in the sun and see, apparently, the frantic blue eye of a madwoman with eyebrows as white as the clouds.
Herr Falaise!
Yes. What do you want? I'm busy.
You are Lionel Falaise?
Yes. I am he. Oh. You must be a German soldier. How odd.
The provost instructed you to report to the commandant of Armorel at 3 o'clock.
Oh, yes. Yes, he did mention something about it, but I'm afraid I became absorbed in what I was doing. I had no idea at the time.
It is now more than 4 o'clock.
Yes, I'm afraid it is. I say, would you mind pointing that idiotic thing somewhere else? It might be loaded.
It is loaded.
Well, then put it away like a good fellow. It might go off.
You will come with me to the commandant at once.
Look here. I take it that your commandant will be staying here for a while, hmm? The point is that I have waited for weeks for that quality of light over Sark. You see, it's incredible, isn't it? Texture like tweed. So, would you ask your commandant if I may call on him in about an hour and a half?
You are insolent! In Poland, you would be flogged and then shot.
Insolent? No. Absent-minded, yes. And let me tell you that murder, whether in Poland, Patagonia, or anywhere else, is no solution to any problem. Assassination is... I think I would like to meet your commandant and apologize for my apparent discourtesy.
Here is Herr Falaise, Herr Hauptmann.
Thank you, Sergeant. He is not Herr, but Mr. Falaise. That is all you will wait outside.
So be fair, Herr Hauptmann.
Won't you have a cigarette and sit down, Mr. Falaise?
Oh, thank you. I don't smoke, but I should like to sit down.
Please.
I must apologize for being late. I was painting, and in Armorel, punctuality is not one of our virtues. Time is our servant, not our master. Believe me when I say I did not wish to be deliberately.
Now, I see that you have had a slight accident, Mr. Valais.
Yes, I slipped. It's nothing much. It will heal.
May I offer you a little brandy?
No, thank you. This is nothing.
While waiting for you, I confess that my curiosity got the better of me, and I spent a profitable half hour amongst the pages of that admirable reference book, Who's Who? I see that you were born in 1912, and that you were educated at Winchester and St. Jude's College, and that you are a B.A. Oxon. Mm. What are you doing in this remote island?
I live here because, as a conscientious pacifist, I refuse to have anything to do with this lunatic war. Here, until you came today, I was a free man. I could paint the things my fingers wanted to paint without a louting uniform, any country's uniform, yours or mine, telling me where I must or must not go.
And because you are a free man, you stay here while your country is at war and paint pretty pictures.
My pictures are not pretty. I hope they're significant.
I am no art critic, Mr. Falaise, but I find it difficult to believe that you can sincerely think as you claim. Shall I tell you what is in my mind?
Please do.
I am wondering if you are here for a purpose.
What purpose?
To work in secret for the British government.
Well, you must come to tea and see my false beard.
It is no subject for laughter, Mr. Falaise. I have a great respect for the British Intelligence Service.
I am not a spy. I live on Armorel for no reason other than to put onto canvas what is in my vision and my mind. I regard war as a form of mass insanity, and I refuse absolutely to have anything to do with it. And it's as simple as that.
Oddly enough, I'm inclined to believe you, against my better judgment. But you have not yet explained to me how you cut your lip.
I slipped. That's all. It was an accident. I have only myself to blame.
I think that you may well be what the English call a gentleman, Mr. Falaise.
There is no discussion so trivial as that of social distinctions. In England, such conversations are confined to the servants' hall. Have I your permission to leave?
Of course, Mr. Falaise. We will meet again many times. By the way, my name is Weiss, Hans Weiss. Hmm. In the new conditions, I most sincerely hope that you will continue to confine your activity on the island to painting.
I have no activity other than painting. I ask only to be left alone. Goodbye, Mr. Or should I say, Captain Weiss.
Auf Wiedersehen, Mr. Falaise.
Dear Lionel, always convinced he was the one in step, and the other 99 were wrong.
Sergeant Fogel.
Yes, sir.
Did you strike Mr. Falaise, Sergeant?
Sir, I...
Did you strike him with your fist?
Sir, Mr. Falaise was insolent. I hit him with the butt of my revolver.
I do not believe that he was insolent, Sergeant. Mr. Falaise is a man of courtesy. When you hit Mr. Falaise with the butt of your revolver, did he expect the blow?
No, sir.
And did you expect that blow?
No, sir.
It is fools and bullies like you who make the name of the Reich hated in the world. You have given an Englishman the right to talk to me, a German officer of the servants' hall, and I have no answer. That is what you have done. If ever you lift your hand again to a living thing on this island, I will shoot you like a dog. Now get out!
Yes, sir.
I suppose that whenever I think of the Germans on my island, I think first of the provost and then of the cour. Men no longer young, wise in the ways of Armorel, but less so in the ways of the world, having to deal with a situation for which they had no experience and nothing to guide them except common sense.
Welcome, my friends.
There is little for me to tell you that you do not know. All firearms and wireless sets are to be surrendered. I have thought deeply about this and have decided that one wireless set must be kept back. Mine is now in a safe place. And I will listen to London and pass on the news to you, and so the island will know the truth.
They are saying in the village that the German officer saw Mr. Lionel this afternoon.
That is true. I do not know what passed between them, but I am sure that from Mr. Lionel we have nothing to fear. Baptiste the cowman will continue to work the farm of the abbe, and he will see and tell us of the movements of our enemies.
That's a good move.
Now, there is one further thing. We of La Cour are a chain, but the strength of a chain lies in its weakest link. In this difficult moment, I speak to you alone, Jean. You are a good man, but when your thirst is on you, you could destroy us all. We are about to drink a glass of rum in honor of our Susan. I beg of you to let that be the last glass you drink until our Suzerain comes back to us.
Oh, it will be so, Monsieur le Provost. I have been foolish in the past. Now it is finished.
You promise this before La Cour?
I promise. In the name of God.
Bravo, Jean.
So be it. I am well pleased, Jean. My friends, is there anything else I can tell you?
The German officer, what is he like?
I think he is a good and honorable man. In his heart, he will not like the things he may do. Only time will show. We must be patient and watchful.
And that was the first day of the German occupation of my island. But it was also the beginning of an unusual series of events in which I myself was deeply involved. As far as I can tell, the next part of the story took place 4 days later in the Ministry of Agriculture and Fisheries in Whitehall, in London.
I am not sure I have understood you correctly, Carruthers.
No, sir.
This file, which you insisted I read urgently, appears to concern a cow.
Yes, sir.
A bovine aristocrat rejoicing in the name of Venus de l'Abbé. Is one correct?
You are correct, sir.
Then may one ask in what way one is involved in the welfare of this lactivorous goddess?
Well, sir, Venus is in calf to a bull called Mars. Venus is an animal of flawless pedigree.
But then the animal shall have the most skilled veterinary attention. A bovine gynecologist will assist at the confinement. No trouble or expense shall be spared.
Just as well, sir.
I beg your pardon?
Well, it may interest you to know, sir, that Venus is on the island of Armorel, and the Channel Islands are now occupied by the Germans.
Oh, dear me. Nobody ever tells me anything.
Venus and her unborn calf are therefore Hitler's prisoners, unless...
I can imagine the expression that must have crossed the civil servant's face as the point finally dawned.
I hope I have misunderstood you, Carruthers.
I should like your permission, sir, to put the file across to the War Office for action.
You ask me to go to the War Office at a time like this, when at any moment London may become a smoking ruin? And the Gestapo could be drinking beer in Dover pubs? That's how bad things are.
I know that, sir, but these two, the one living and the other in the womb, are of incalculable value to the future of British pedigree breeding.
And suppose your Venus were to bear a female calf? Surely the strain you so ardently desire would eventually be dissipated. For the preservation of the strain, a bull calf is essential, am I correct?
Indeed you are, sir. But in Armorel, it has been known for centuries that if a calf is conceived when the tide is on the flood, it will be a bull.
Oh.
If a cow is served during the ebb tide, she'll cast a heifer. With Venus, nothing was left to chance. She was led to her mate on a day when a southwest wind packed a spring tide halfway up the cliffs of the island. A bull calf is assured.
I will speak frankly. In my opinion, your enthusiasm has outrun your reason, Carruthers.
Oh.
To put this file officially to the War Office at this juncture is to invite ridicule.
But, sir...
On the other hand, Who am I to dissuade you from having unofficial and unrecorded conversations with the soldiery? In times like these, all things are possible, and it may be that you will find someone in authority who is as chivalrous as you are yourself.
Oh, thank you very much, sir.
But it wasn't just in London that interest was being shown in Venus and her calf-to-be. On Amorelle, where the Germans and the islanders were learning, uneasily, to live side by side, the commandant was inspecting the Abbey herd.
This is a beautiful animal.
Baptiste will be here soon, Monsieur le Commandant. He will be able to answer your questions.
Baptiste has been the cowman at the Abbey for as long as I can remember. I cannot imagine what he felt that afternoon when he saw a stranger examining Venus. And it must have been even more surprising to realize that the German had the air of an experienced farmer.
How old is this animal?
3 years, 11 months, and 10 days, monsieur.
So, and when is she due to calve?
In 14 days, monsieur.
I think she will be a day or two late. Would you stand back, please? I wish to take some photographs of her.
Monsieur le Provost, I do not understand why.
Baptiste, have patience. I will see no harm comes to her.
I was not always a soldier, Monsieur le Provost. Oh. Before the British declared war on Germany, I was a farmer, and my herd of pedigree Frisians was renowned not only in Westphalen, but throughout the Reich. This animal is as good a cow of her breed as I have ever seen. She is flawless.
That is so, Monsieur.
I think she will be of the greatest interest to Berlin. Huh? You will please instruct the cowman here to set out for me her pedigree, sire and dam, back to her great-grandparents. Oh, and the same for the bull to which she's in calf. I would also like her milk yield over a year and percentage of butterfat content. Is it understood?
It is understood, Monsieur le Commandant, but this cow is known to all of us, and her calf could be very precious to us. May one ask...
You may ask nothing, Monsieur le Provost. If I were to answer you as a farmer, I would speak with a sympathy which, as an officer, I am unable to show. Please, give your orders to Baptiste.
Monsieur, his English is bad. May I speak to him in patois?
Yes.
Baptiste. The commandant requires the full pedigrees of Venus and Mars. He also requires her milk yield and percentage of butterfat.
Oh,
if you are clever, you will know what to do.
But I can only tell the truth. Then what will happen to Venus?
You are a fool, my old friend. Give the figures to me, and I will present them to the German officer. All will yet be well.
If Monsieur le Provost says...
I have given your orders, Monsieur le Commandant. Baptiste understands.
Good. Now we will look at the animals in the next field. They will suffer by comparison with this elegant goddess.
Come. Very well, Monsieur le Commandant.
Oh, my Venus. They will want to take you away to Germany. But you will not go. No. You will not go to Germany. You will not go. You will not go.
As the Germans swept across Europe, they had taken prisoners of many kinds, but surely none so strange as a pedigree cow. And even stranger, perhaps, was the fact that for this cow, I was about to risk not only my life, but the lives of many people very dear to me.
In part one of Appointment with Venus by Gerard Tickell, dramatized for radio by Michael Bartlett, Karen Archer was Nicola Falaise, David Collings, Lionel, and Frederick Yeager, Captain Weiss. Hugh Dixon was the Provost, Michael Tudor Barnes, Sergeant Fogel, William Simons, Jean Labouté, and Michael Deacon, Baptiste. Lawrence Payne and Steve Hodson were Petherton and Carruthers. Venus was played by Percy Edwards, and other parts were played by members of the cast. Technical direction was by Chris Lewis, assisted by Nick Herron and Dave Howe. The production assistant was Nikki Hildebrandt. This was a BBC World Service drama production directed by David Hitchinson.